And welcome to your Friday breakfast podcast with Capitalize. As you can hear from my return, we're back to normal service this morning, and I'll be your host alongside my trusty partner, Kirsty. Morning, Kirsty. How are we?
Morning, Alex. I'm great, thank you.
Nice. As for now, we're an audio only podcast. You won't be able to see the slightly different backgrounds that Kirsty and I are sat in front of. I'm sat on a glorious beachfront stoop in Mauritius, only an hour or so away from a nice cold pina colada. And after what's been a busy week for UK accountants, a busy week for our UK team, Kirsty is sat up in Coventry at the Accounting Web trade show.
I think I got the short straw out of this, didn't I? I didn't get the deal that you got.
I think
global traveler, Alex.
Yeah, I seem to do quite well in these calls. I mean, it's part of the reason why I left the UK was to make this more of a possibility. But Kirsty, talk to me. How's Accounting Web going? We obviously had Accountex North that we broke down in one of these podcasts not that long ago. It feels like it could have been a long time ago, but I don't think it was that long ago.
No, it was about 5 weeks, 6 weeks ago. Yeah, Accountex North was in Manchester. This is the Accounting Web live show in Coventry in the Midlands. They're going to move it to NEC next year, apparently. So it's still going to stay in the Midlands. They're trying to make this the event for the Midlands, which I'm all for. You know, I'm passionate about the, you know, pushing the region.
Anything north of the M25.
Anything north of Watford Gap. Yeah. And that's, I'm really hoping that they're going to make this a continual feature and the Midlands market will start to love it. We've had some great speakers. We've had some great sessions. Our CEO, Paul's been on a panel this morning with Alistair Barlow of Flinder and Will Farnell of Farnell Clark and the M&A guy that's responsible for buying practices for assets, talking about buying and selling accountancy firms and valuations and how to fund them. So that was great. Full house, really, really engaged audience. So some brilliant talks. We're obviously talking credit scores today, more so than funding, which is going down really well. People are loving to understand about the Experian credit tools we've got. So yeah, it's good to be out. Nice. But you know, I think I'd rather be in Mauritius, I've got to say.
Yeah, and actually, I remember I think it was around 2016, we ran an event at Receipt Bank called Three Times More. And the whole event was around exactly what you just spoke about with Paul and the team from Flinder around selling and buying accountancy practices and around the impact of having a process driven software backed accounting firm on a valuation, on an exit strategy. So it's, you know, it's good to hear that rhetoric is still going, still scary.
And the market is buoyant. You know, the there's a lot of consolidation going on. There's a lot of buying and selling, a lot of equity investment in the accountancy space. But anyhow, we're here to talk about wider business stories today, aren't
exactly,
we? Not just the accounting profession.
Let's not get down that rabbit hole. Okay, so kick us off then. You've got, well, I don't know, when I look at your first story, I do think maybe we stay talking about accounting, but let's talk about your first story and the winter of discontent.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, I've got to cover this story because it is prolific, unfortunately, in the UK at the moment, which is strikes. We've had the Royal Mail strikes this week. We've got train strikes on and off, nurses going out, airlines, private sectors as well, not just public sector this time. And I just picked a story actually from the weekend from the BBC, which they're talking about. If you're probably, you're far too young, Alex, but the winter of discontent was 1978. And that was the door that opened Margaret Thatcher's government to come in 1979, because, you know, there was such massive walkouts then across lots of industries. And of course, the union membership was a lot larger then than it is now. But I was quite shocked to see that 1.5 million workers are potentially involved in these strikes across the private and public sector this year. And they're all going to be polled over the next few weeks. So it's like, is this the new winter of discontent? So we know this is going on. We know there's issues around it. We know it's a struggle for both the government and private sector to talk about wages. We know it's a struggle for employees to make ends meet. Completely understand that. But what I wanted to talk about today was actually a bit of insider information from one of the trades. So it was the Royal Mail strike yesterday. And obviously, the Royal Mail used to be the only provider in the UK of delivery services. And now we've got a whole courier network, pallet network, etc., delivering packages in particular. And Royal Mail have said they are going to try and prioritise their packages. But actually, what happened yesterday is my other half works for one of the large courier companies. And they, of the last few days, their numbers, at this time of year, you would expect to explode anyway. They have absolutely gone bananas with volumes. Now, what's happened is then, because suppliers are choosing not to use Royal Mail because they're trying to guarantee their deliveries, they're going to the private sector couriers instead.
And those couriers can't cope with their volumes. They're just not used to them. If you think it's a very fast moving industry, logistics, and they, you know, today they might get a parcel, they want it delivering tomorrow. It's very fast now. So they don't get a lot of time to predict volumes. And unfortunately, what is happening in the industry now, and it's not really hit the press yet, hence I'm giving you a bit of an advance warning of this.
We like that. We like that on the Future Positive Podcast.
Exactly,
the
a bit of an insider. This is a specific knowledge now for you. And for suppliers and anybody that's, you know, not just consumers, but suppliers that are packaging up and sending things online and around the UK or around the world for that matter. The logistics industry are going to suffer because just yesterday, just in the Leeds depot, which looks after West Yorkshire, they had 26,000 packages they couldn't deliver. Now, that is unheard of. They clear the depot every single day, usually. They've got 26,000 packages, and those packages are sat in the yard on trailers. So what we're actually going to find is that we can't use the trailers on the HGVs either because they're being used as storage facilities. Here's a shocking thing, though. Just in Leeds, they expect by Christmas, there will be 500,000 parcels that they haven't managed to deliver. 500,000 parcels just in Leeds. So there's going to be a lot of disappointed people at Christmas. Suppliers are going to have to get ahead of this.
All those bags of coal.
Expectations. It's a real shock. So although we think about Royal Mail, we think about Christmas card deliveries, actually, it's a lot wider than that. And it's going to have a ripple effect.
It's an interesting industry. It's an interesting double whammy, though, isn't it? It because actually what happens by people striking, let's say, at the Royal Mail to keep this theme going, actually, because there is this, you know, an increased democracy now with how we can move parcels, packages, cards, etc., the consumer has a choice to go, well, actually, or even a supplier has the choice to say, I'm going to not use Royal Mail. I'm going to use one of a delivery network. And actually, that has a compound impact on the Royal Mail because they've got less mail coming through. They're getting less revenue, which actually means they're less able to meet demands of striking workforce.
Completely.
And also, generally speaking, the demand on their service is lower. Therefore, actually, the requirement of their own workforce might be depleted. So there's that side of it. There's also this you know, double-edged sword on the other side, that actually, because everyone has moved towards using courier services, you may well find that using Royal Mail now might be quicker and easier because they've got less parcels coming
through. Could be when they're not striking. Yeah.
It's like when you're in a traffic jam and you move from one lane to the other.
Yeah.
The lane that you've left always seems to go quicker because all of the cars have jumped from that lane to the other.
Everyone's done the same. Yeah. But I think we're creatures of habit, and suppliers must be as well. Companies are creatures of habit. So once they've set up an account with one of the courier companies, it's easier for them to stay with them than go back to Royal Mail, you know. So it is going to have a real impact.
They do tend to work on contracts as well, right? We talk about the gig economy, so they can bring people in and out as they need to help meet demand. And I think because they are privatized, they have a better ability to be able to cope with it and move faster. But you know, we talk about the strike impacts, we talk about, you know, the inside scoop here on the courier front, and a lot of that is driven by your next story, which is the Black Friday retail figures, right?
Yeah, this is it. So I was quite interested to try and get the stats out for Black Friday, because it was weird this year. I think more than any other year, we've shifted. Black Friday is no longer a day. It is
Black week,
a month.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's not even a week. It's been a month, I think. And I mean, is Black Friday a thing in South Africa?
It is. Yeah.
No, so it's gone completely around enormous. The world. Yeah. But I think, I wonder if the impact of it is going to wane a little bit. And it, because it's now not a day, it's not even Cyber Monday and Black Friday, it's virtually the whole month, but it's not quite as impactful as it used to be when it first started in the, you know, the Amazon days in the States. So interesting here that there's not a lot of press about the Black Friday statistics. What there is the British Retail Consortium put out their regular monitor, the SPI monitor, shop price inflation monitor, and they're saying shop price inflation rose to a record high of 7.4%, food inflation surged to 12.4%, the highest since records began. And so we know inflation is still a factor. And I think that is now starting to pinch and having an impact on the high street and on retail generally. And the article I picked from The Guardian really is just talking about all the massive sales that they're still continuing to do into December, which used to be unheard of, sales in December.
Yeah, I must admit, I was reading that article and it's talking about 50% cuts, 30% cuts. It's the extension of Black Friday into almost November as a whole is crazy. And it's perhaps, as you said, is a reflection or a sad indictment on what's happening out there at the moment. People have less disposable income. They've got less ability to go out and say, well, I'm going to go spend 300 quid on Christmas presents this year. They're actually looking at, oh, maybe I'll spend 50 to 100. And so retailers have got to find a way of energizing. I mean, it's mind blowing. We had a massive Black Friday sale here. It's extended over the weekend. It's in the build up. You know, most retailers are doing 2 week sales, but it's obviously working because I went to buy. We have a new joiner in our South African team this week. I went to buy him a new laptop on Monday, and when I went to three iStores, which is the South African premium reseller, and it was only in the third one that I could get hold of a MacBook Air because they'd run a Cyber Monday Black Friday sale, and it was only 10 or 15% off, but they'd sold almost out of MacBook Airs in Cape Town. So it's obviously having an impact, obviously having the desired result. Or
never
maybe
used
people
to have sales, did they? People would never discount their products. And neither would like someone like Pandora for jewellery. And they are having sales and they are discounting stuff. So like you say, it must be having an impact. Apparently the UK shops did record a 4.2% year-on-year uplift compared to 2021 in that 1 week around Black Friday, but it's still 14% down on pre-pandemic levels. Obviously, a lot of people have done online. I know, again, from the experience of my partner, that November was lower than they expected, but then this week has absolutely exploded. So maybe people did kind of leave it towards the end of November before they did really spend. But we'll see when the stats come out. I just thought it was interesting. There's not been a huge amount of statistics around it yet.
I mean, I think we know. We've kind of touched on it already, but I think, you know, there is just this growing challenge, isn't there, with everything is getting more expensive. And so people have less of an ability to be as frivolous, shall we say. I think certainly speaking from my own experience, when I get wrapped up in Black Friday, I often buy stuff I don't need.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, 48% off. And I'm like, that sounds like a good idea. We had a lot of stuff in the news here actually around looking at companies like Amazon, you know, South African equivalents, Takealot as an example, and cross-referencing the price that they were selling stuff at on Black Friday versus the actual, you know, recommended retail price. Because if you were to go buy, let's say, a Samsung TV off Takealot at 10,000 Rand, and they're saying it's down from 15,000 Rand, actually people were saying go check what it's being sold for on the Samsung website, because Samsung is selling it at 10,000 and Takealot I've just put a fake markup on. So it is an interesting one.
We'll keep watching.
I think the story will develop and unfold. But you know, we talk about some challenges with the Black Friday sales, and actually we look at, you know, the third story that you brought in, which is around resilience and success in the kind of tech and scale up sector.
Yeah, so I love this because I love to talk about scale-ups. We in the UK, we have a huge market of SMEs, but the vast proportion of them are micro businesses. And actually, there used to be a lot of zombie companies in there as well that were struggling to just keep going and just pay interest on facilities and keep the taxman happy. And I think, you know, we lost 1 million of those during the COVID period. So I think that the market that's left should be a bit more resilient. But in particular, I love this it's not new, it's been around a few years, the Scale Up Institute. And the Scale Up Institute are only focusing on the scale up businesses. Now, a definition of scale up businesses for them is those that tip over into the definition of a medium business. So we have micro, we have small, and then we have medium. And medium is 10.2 million turnover or 5.1 million assets. So if the business tips into there, they become one of the scale up businesses, according to the Scale Up Institute. In the UK, there's 33,955 scale-up businesses, but between them, and here's the impressive thing, they generate $1.2 trillion value to the UK economy. And they're the ones that are not only contributing 50% of the total turnover of the SME economy, but they're the ones to watch because they are remaining resilient and they are growing. Mm. So that's really comforting, I suppose. They're still growing and there's still businesses out there doing this.
It would be interesting that there's so many stats on this that I'd love to see. And I think you are right that those businesses, because they are larger, they have bigger teams, they have greater, you know, financial acumen and foresight strategy. One of the things we talk about in the lending space is how bigger businesses tend to borrow faster. And there's Bank of England data to support that because they have, they have that strategic
teams.
That are looking ahead. So it would be really interesting to extrapolate this data out across something like recruitment, because one of the other things that we've seen, we talk about resilience, is that a lot of businesses that sit in this space have actually let staff go as a mechanism to help them survive. Because actually, you know, we went through this period of, you know, they talk about it in the tech world, that free money period where you could get hold of cash very, very easily, and people were lending. And as we now know, people are not really lending at the moment. And so businesses are looking at how to become more resilient. They're looking at how to become more strategic. They're looking at how to better spend pounds, dollars, whatever currency it is that they're working in. But it's, you know, it's as you said, it's great to see that there is a resilient piece here, and that I think these type of businesses, SMEs, and also as they tip into the medium space, tend to be the ones that demonstrate that kind of economic resurgence, right? It's businesses that are the ones that we are requiring or reliant on in order to
grow again and get us out of the mess.
and the slight difference for us in South Africa is we tend to look at the slightly smaller side of that. So the ones before they hit the medium or the scale up criteria, that are the ones here that are really going to be pushing it and driving it. Because,
well, I think for advisors as well, that's going to be, if you can spot those businesses, you're onto a winner, aren't you? The new chairman of the Scale Up Institute is a lady called Margaret Rice Jones, and she, just to say on what you just said there, she knows that there are three pillars that are critical to the scale up businesses' ability to continue on their growth, and it is access to markets. And she says, you know, there's a lot of them that are exporting more now, 6% more exporting. Fantastic. Access to talent, which is what you said about recruitment, and access to finance. Again, we know that's going to be challenging for some businesses unless they are really focused on that as a strategic goal to help them. So, you know, that's hopeful. And definitely, I think this is Scale Up Institute is worth following. They have a report out where 338 CEOs have responded. So I think that's really worth reading.
I mean, there's some amazing stats coming out, and I think what's great is that businesses now more so than previously are willing to contribute towards these stats and this data, because they understand the importance of actually tracking recovery and tracking and predicting the future. So those were our three big stories this week. I think there was a good mix of insight, sadness, and positivity, which is seems to be a good blend for us. I haven't got a fun story this week, but I think as I wasn't allowed, and it's unusual for me to want to talk about football, but seeing as I wasn't allowed to talk about football in the interview that we recorded this week, which is coming out soon, I thought I would just touch on the fact that we are in World Cup fever. I think, you know, it always makes me chuckle a little bit when I'm in South Africa and with the Euros and with the World Cup. I never really feel much of the enthusiasm that's because we're, you know, people here don't really care that much, to be honest, but England have obviously made it through. We had that rip-roaring win against Wales this week, which you know, I think I went to bed at half time in that game at 0-0.
Badly timed. But we've got one of our Welsh girls is on the team here today. She wasn't very happy on watching the game at the end.
No, I had a good back and forth with Liv actually in the summer when South Africa were playing rugby against Wales. So you know, that's a bit closer to home for me. But we've got obviously Senegal in the round of 16 on Sunday. Yeah. So you know, that gets us one step closer to it feeling like that its coming home statement might ring true. One day, who knows?
So it took the Manchester boys, Alex, to get us out the mess. You know, Rashford, Foden, what can I say? Bring down the Manchester boys.
I mean, again, I'm just regurgitating the news that I've read this week, but I saw some good articles around how that demonstrated the depth in our squad.
Is that right?
Apparently, I'm not sure. I've gone out of my depth there talking about it. But for all of you that are new to the podcast and don't know much about Capitalize, here's a reminder about who we are and what we do. Our vision, very, very simply, is to give small businesses and their advisors transparency and control over business finance. We want every small business to be able to identify risks they might face, explore how they stand from a credit perspective, and choose the right funding that fits their business. And as Kirsty was saying right at the very beginning of this podcast, talking about the conversations we're having with accountants at Accounting Web this week, that credit piece is so important. And you know, it's becoming more and more prevalent and more front of mind for business owners as we look at the challenges that are out there at the moment. For those of you that listen to the podcast on a weekly basis, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast, and of course subscribe to make sure you get all of the future episodes as they arrive hot off of the press. Next Friday we've got another interview. I'm going to throw that over to Kirsty in a second, because I've completely forgotten who we've got next week. Who have we got, Kirsty? She's forgotten.
Is it the one we're recorded this week? It may well be Darren.
It may well be. So I think it's going to be Darren from Crowdcube. That, if you haven't come across Crowdcube before, please do go check them out. Crowdcube is an amazing company. It's a crowdfunding platform for businesses. And Darren talks really passionately around how the business was started with his goal of actually trying to enable more people to support businesses, but also increase the likelihood and chances for businesses to get funding in what was becoming, and as we're reliving right now, an increasingly difficult time to get access to capital. So tune in for that. And if you do find yourself with a few quiet moments this week or next week, go back and look through our backlog, because there's some also really quite exciting interviews there as well. And we referenced a bit of a debrief on the Accountex North. That was a fantastic podcast that we ran with Dan from My Firm's App just recently. So make sure you go check that one out as well. More than just a debrief on Accountex, that was actually some really, really good chats and insight around the industry and where he thinks it's going as well. So for more about the Future Positive podcast and Capitalize, please do go check us out at www.capitalize.com. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back again in 2 weeks.
Enjoy that pina colada, Alex.
I will.